Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Degrassi alumni, we are back with you. It is another DGrads podcast, long overdue. Well, 2 weeks overdue. I am one of your hosts, Shane Kipple, otherwise known as Gavin Spinner-Mason. And over there, we have someone else.
Your other co-host, Mike Lobel, a.k.a. Jay Hogart. Thanks for sticking in, hanging in there. We haven't done this in a little while. So yeah. We were on a little break.
Yeah.
And
We've been all over the place. You were in Greece. I was in Texas. Yours sounds a little bit more interesting.
I don't know.
Barbecue, but regardless, we were traveling.
Cowboys.
But we never stopped thinking about all of you. And thank you for your patience. We won't leave you again until the next time we leave you. So, Mike.
Next week. Just kidding.
Mike, we have a very special guest today.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. We've got a special episode. Today, we are joined by someone who has... Honestly, Shane probably spent more time at Degrassi Community School than we have,
I believe it.
Jocelyn Claiborne, a.k.a. Degrassi Kid. They're a writer, a podcaster, a prolific digital content creator in their own right, by the by. And they've built a real following deep diving into Degrassi The Next Generation and the other iterations of the show. Not just recapping it, but really getting in there, interrogating it, what it got right, what hits differently now, and why the show still is enduring after all these years and really sticking with people. So I used to think of Jocelyn as a student peer personally, but now I'm starting to think of them as a faculty member of Degrassi. I think they've graduated to faculty. We're ready to learn from Jocelyn. Jocelyn, oh my gosh, thank you so much and welcome to DGrads.
Yes. I am so happy to be here. I'm getting you to write all my intros. That made me feel so amazing. Oh my gosh.
He's very good. He's very good at writing intros. Everyone talks about it.
It's the least I could do for having you on the show. Really, you know, you lap Shane and I in knowledge and depth with this material. And we're just, as I say, and as we always say, and we should probably state it up top, DGrads is a show where Shane and I get to watch the television show we were on for the first time.
And also, let's not forget, one thing that your intro could have incorporated, Mike, Jocelyn was gracious enough to allow us to introduce the DGrads podcast or the idea of it to the world.
That's true.
Which is coming up on, 8 months ago, 9 months ago now?
Yeah.
And gave us a platform to do that. So we're endlessly grateful for allowing you on yours.
I love this. It's like we're assigned as group partners on projects and we just keep working together. I love it.
There you go.
It's true.
There you go. So without your permission, Mike, without your permission, Jocelyn, I'm just going to get right into it because that's how I do. So this is, you ready? Episode 205, season 205, Weird Science, the one that really set Spinner apart from the rest of the cast for good reason. This came out on October 20th, 2002. Yeah. Jocelyn, do you remember what you were doing in 2002?
Well, I was in elementary school. I was 8 years old. And I remember Crossroads would have come out then. So I probably would have been singing a lot of Britney Spears. I'm not a girl.
Yeah.
Predicting my non-binary future, singing I'm Not a Girl by Britney Spears in 2002.
Mm-hmm. Hey,
but yeah,
fitting.
Definitely watching some Britney.
Shane coincidentally has a photograph. Yeah, I knew he was going to pull it off
of course. The shelf. Well, everyone knows by now. Someone actually screen grabbed that, and which I was very impressed by because I thought I keep it out. But anyway, great. It hits close to home, Jocelyn. You have a friend in me. So the writers of this episode are the power couple, but not at that time. James Hurst and Shelley Scarrow both came up with the story, and I like to think fell in love while they were coming up with that story.
Mm-hmm.
And James also did the teleplay, and it was directed by none other than Bruce McDonald. Because
Jocelyn, I don't know if you, do you notice, do you perceive, I mean, you've seen these episodes so much, you perceive the difference in directing styles?
Can't say I pick up directing styles, but I do tend to notice when the episodes have a lot of inspiration from the Degrassi Junior High era. I think you can kind of tell whenever there's someone who's connected to the OG era. Honestly, I think season one and two of TNG are just what if Degrassi Junior High happened with computers. That's my opinion
on
it.
Yeah, that's a great, that is a great point. We're always in the tech lab, you know, seeing what the kids are getting into, the crazy tech they're into these days.
Yeah.
Messenger and little Tamagotchis and whatnot.
Oh, wow, Mike. Tamagotchis are so much older than that. you want to date us more? But we were talking about this last episode, Mike, that I find it that now the characters are, or the actors slash characters are now just, they've taken on a life of their own. They've taken root. And now it's not about actors trying to find who those characters are. And they have a backstory from season one. So I feel like everyone's more relaxed. Mm-hmm. And you know what to expect from them. And now you get to put them in situations to see how they react to it. So I'm having a lot of fun, especially with this one.
Did everyone else avoid eating fruits and vegetables for this episode just in case?
Shane, I made I'm sure not to. You.
I wanted to test the theory out. So that's all I ate for the whole episode. And
I have a binder right here just in case.
Oh, Mike, there's a story about this that you're going to be hearing for the first time, too. So without further ado, let's get to it. So we open on Mr. Simpson and Spike and Emma eating dinner when Simpson takes Spike's hand and creates a little moment. This visibly upsets Emma. And in trying to engage Emma in small talk, she then tells him that she's doing a school project to prove the correlation between healthy breakfast and school performance. She keeps addressing him as Mr. Simpson, which eventually gets him to tell her that at home he could call her Archie. But defiantly, at her next opportunity to call him Archie, she goes right back to Mr. Simpson. She does not like what's going on there. Roll credits.
My question actually for you guys for this section was, we get a lot of build up. We know what Caitlin and Joey are going through just from watching TNG. And I'm curious to know, are you guys familiar with Spike and Snake's history from Degrassi High? Like, do you even know if they had a relationship in the original series? I've kind of bogarted your question, Shane.
That's a really good.
No.
Oh my God, we're frozen. We've been put on the spot.
I don't know what their history is.
I have no idea.
We're being taken to school today. All right.
We're being schooled. We are in Jocelyn's classroom.
I think it's kind of an interesting story because, so they never dated, but Spike had a huge crush on Snake and she actually asked him to the school dance. And there's one of these iconic, kind of fever dream moments where she asks him and then he starts laughing his head off at her and the whole school is pointing at her.
No.
But she stands up, she does ask him out, but then another girl that he actually likes back asks him to the dance and he doesn't go with Spike anymore.
Oh.
And that's their history. And he actually did. There's only one other fact I want to share because I could go on and on. But there is a scene where Spike and Snake are studying together and Snake is playing with baby Emma, which is very, very cute.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Oh my gosh. So this is like, this is just, it's destined.
Yeah, I'm shocked she never mentioned another girl.
He kept himself single for all those years because it was just a, you know, hang in there, baby. One day it's going to happen for you. I can feel it.
Yeah.
all right. So now Emma and Manny compiled data for her project on by the front steps of the school. She tells Manny about her troubles with Simpson being in her life too much, in her home and at school.
And Spinner jump roping in the deep background there, by the way.
Yes, that's right. Just glorified background that day.
Yeah.
In the hallway now, Jimmy is down on one knee asking Ellie out on a date. He is proposing a date.
This is such a turn from where we've seen Jimmy recently.
Yeah.
This episode does a lot to predict the future because we get, you know, Spinner and Emma kind of have their first premarital fight in this episode. And later, Jimmy and Ellie, they kind of have a little bit of a thing later on. So this episode's really laying, the writers knew 7 years in advance what was going on.
That's right. That's right. But do we really think he's over Ashley at this point? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah, but also that one was always so weird. It was always so hot and cold and never was properly resolved and then jumped back in and then done again. So I don't know what Jimmy is thinking, but right now he's down on one knee asking Ellie out, and she is now apparently Ashley's BFF, so she has to turn him down on that alone.
That's the only reason why.
Yeah.
Spinner looks on while this is all happening, and he is enjoying a banana. Now, Jimmy tries to wrangle Spinner to class, but Spinner can't stand up because he's experiencing a certain biological phenomenon, and he blames the healthy food that Emma's been giving him for this project that he volunteered for. Now, after going back and forth a little bit, Jimmy offers him his binder to keep little Spinner hidden. And for the moment, all is well.
Is this where you ask me if I relate to getting boners in class?
Yes.
Oh, it's so brutal. Degrassi really, really made me feel seen in this moment. Okay. Yeah.
This was, I was so shy in these days. I was still trying to, you know, figure out where I was in the world, who I was in relation to everybody else. And I was always a bit of a joker, but I hated being put on the spot dancing in front of people, especially so that, you know, Basketball Diaries, where Spinner had to dance in front of the whole crowd and all of the crew. It was terrible, but I got through it. This was also not that easy.
Just the next level.
Yeah.
So you're in the read through and you realize what this episode is about.
Yeah.
Are you beat red? What do you think?
No, my face is probably like this. Like, okay. All right.
I can do this.
Okay. Yeah. It's great. Let's do it. But you know, all's well that ends well. Now, we are with Ms. Hatzilakos, who looks over the students' progress on their science project. Liberty gloats that the top marks belong to her. Emma stresses that her hypothesis of healthy eating equaling better performance is flawed, as Spinner and JT are outliers. They're showing the opposite to what she would have thought. JT, in this moment, spills something all over Miss Hatzilakos and her chest, and
he does this on purpose?
I don't know if he did it on purpose, but it seemed like he was very happy to help her clean it up.
Yeah, he's reaping the rewards on that one.
It's part didn't age very well. This is a little, it's a little
Toby pervy. Toby can't believe what he's watching. But the girls are all unimpressed. Oh, JT, you're incorrigible.
he really is. I want to point out, though, the Liberty beat, because I thought Liberty was like a very interesting character in this episode, particularly like her kind of her fatal flaw is really showing. She is so overly confident, but it's also by the end of the episode, I'm starting to really feel for her, because this overconfidence and this attention to detail is alienating to people, and it prevents anybody from getting close to her, it seems. And yeah, so I actually felt really bad for her in this episode.
Well, I can kind of relate, because I was kind of the Liberty in high school. Like, my idea of fun is me and my best friend would sit in the library and we would do Sudoku puzzles and race to get them, to see who could get them done quicker. So that's who I was. And I came in third place at my science fair, and I remember specifically wanting to go look at first and second place. And I was like, oh, well, they did this and they didn't do that. And I was the Liberty of my junior high school for sure.
So mm-hmm. is Liberty the character that you identified with on the show the most?
I think I was the most in school. I was most like Liberty, but Ellie Nash was my girl. I was such an emo kid. I related so much to her storyline. So Ellie was definitely the girl that I saw myself in. But the person I was probably most like is a mix between Ashley and Liberty, I would say.
Yeah, we should have you back on for a big Ellie storyline.
Whisper to a Scream is one of my all-time favorite episodes. I'll tell you that.
Okay. Noted. Yeah. Yeah.
We really don't know anything about her yet, except she seems to be a little bit of a, you know, she's quiet. She keeps to herself.
And, we know that she slings a Les Paul guitar over the back of her shoulder, which we saw in the previous scene. I was like, whoa.
She's a badass.
She's
badass.
A rock
she's
star.
She's rad.
She's
right. She's right. All right. So Emma confronts JT by his locker, accusing him of cheating and messing with her results. I don't know how you would cheat something like that, but JT denies it, and he and Toby belch Emma right out of the vicinity. So now Emma finds Spinner and confronts him with the same accusation. Spinner retorts with, you know, you've ruined my life with your health food and this dumb project. And in trying to get away, he bumps into Ellie, and another problem arises, if you will. seems like a strong breeze is going to do it for Spinner at this point. And as Spinner walks away from Emma, who doesn't get the answer she wanted, she is extremely frustrated. Now, we are at home with Emma. Spike and Snake watch a movie on the couch while Emma stresses in the kitchen over her project and it not working out the way that she wanted. When Simpson comes in and tries to help, bond with her, open up a bit of a dialogue, Emma shuts him down again. And this time it visibly hurts him. And it also disappoints a hopeful Spike who thought that maybe that would have, you know, been a moment that they could have, you know, broken some new ground on, but that is not how it went. And Emma actually registers this time that she hurt both of the adults in that room.
She can be incredibly strong willed to a fault and can hurt other people accidentally. But then when she realizes that she's done something wrong, she's very quick to owning up, very quick to fessing up to it, and wants to set it straight. At the end, by the end of the episode, I think she does something really brave that a lot of people would not do. They'd take the W and they wouldn't question it. But she's kind of a good role model, I think, by the end of this.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
By the end. But she, in this moment, sees that she really stung Snake, and her mom was hurt by this as well. And you would think that maybe she would be a little bit more cautious about her interactions with Snake from that point on throughout the episode. And she just gets worse. She... You know,
there's a fight. There's a full on fight that my jaw was on the floor. Like, I could never imagine talking. The guy who played Jay was like, I could never imagine talking to a teacher like
this. Teacher like that. Yeah.
I was like, whoa. But
I will say that as the person here who had their parents divorce when I was 13, and the first people that they dated, no matter how nice they were to me, no matter how sweet they were to me, nurturing, giving me my space, whatever I needed, there was nothing that could make me come around to them. I could tolerate them, but if they ever tried to engage me one-on-one when my dad or my mom were off doing something else, I couldn't take it. It's just I think she plays this really well. The fact that Snake is also her teacher obviously adds fuel to the fire, but it's weird. It's just a weird thing watching your parent date someone else. Yeah.
I went through that same thing. I think you articulated that perfectly. And maybe even to the point when I was a teenager, I didn't recognize that was happening. But now looking back, I was absolutely, it didn't matter what they did, or even if they were the perfect, best person in the world, I would push them away just simply because who they were in my life. And I actually do want to go back to that scene in the hallway, because as a fan watching it, Emma and Spinner have basically had their only interaction or their main interaction, and then they end up married. What was it like to go back and watch this scene knowing that several years in the future, we're going to jump to your wedding day?
Mm-hmm. I did find it interesting.
He's blushing.
Yeah.
Am I?
Get the binder.
Stop it. I'm going to turn off my light here. No. Get the binder. No, see, I already am not wearing pants. Why would I bring that binder out?
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. It was the buddings of something, but also I don't think we interacted again until season 9. So
I think that's what we're all thinking when we're watching it, is we're like, okay,
yeah,
this is their moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
The meet cute.
And how sweet that he keeps the project. He shows it off to her whenever they're getting married. Like, how cute is that?
That's true. My question for that is, what if they didn't get married? Why was he keeping this project anyway?
That is so true.
And how did he get his hands on it? It wasn't his to take. Many questions.
He also didn't even care about it. So this is kind of strange. You're right.
That's right. That's right. But it was a nice moment. It was a nice moment that they put in there, but full of holes. Full of holes. It's okay.
That's true.
It's okay.
You've got me questioning all right. Your assy now.
So that's all we do. So now it's a new day. The science fair is in full swing. Montage of a whole bunch of these projects being demonstrated and displayed to the judges. JT tries to impress Radich with a new type of breast implant that Radich is looking for his excuse to get out of there.
I'm waiting for JT to become a more two-dimensional character, because he's starting to become the more...
Yeah.
He's got one thing on his mind, and that's it.
It will get there, but you're right. That's all. He's just the horny little kid at this point. Yeah. That's all he is. And then Toby provides that excuse for Radich, steals him away to dazzle him with a lesson in surveillance. But that's also not a full-blown robot, but I want to know exactly what... I would have watched that presentation. I'm genuinely interested.
We had mini-sode science fair projects from the Degrassi kids.
That's right. All the things that you didn't get to see that day. Yeah, that's perfect.
I also love how Jake delivers that line of surveillance, friend or foe. It gets me every time. I love that line.
Yeah. And of course, it's Toby to do that. And I would have thought that Simpson would have really given him top spot for that, because obviously they're kindred spirits when it comes to the world of technology. Emma has all but accepted defeat. She doesn't really think that her project is going to do it for anyone anymore. But as Manny munches a chocolate bar for breakfast and tells Emma it tastes like happy, Emma has a eureka moment. I also think that is, as actors, sometimes you get very corny lines.
Uh-huh.
And you have to do the best with it that you can. And I bought that line from Cassie, hook, line, and sinker.
Every time Manuela is on screen, she kills it. I just don't. Yeah. You're right. She has this way of making the most mundane lines so full of life and quirkiness. And you're kind of like, huh? Yeah. Who are you?
I think this is how she's one of the ones that ended up with the catchphrase. Cuckoo by Bananas, I think, could only be pulled off consistently, differently every time by Manny Santos.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And even when Emma leaves and she says, Manny, you are brilliant. And her throwaway, thank you.
It
was so good. Oh,
she's so
man.
Funny.
I can't wait to see her storylines pick up. So Emma has her eureka moment. Next time we see her, she is changing her project name from Virtue of Healthy Eating to the Mind-Body Connection in the computer lab and runs back to the fair.
She's a genius.
She is?
Yeah.
Simpson is underwhelmed by Liberty's project and, once again, cannot wait
well,
to get away.
Undermined by Liberty's delivery of her project.
True. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true. That's true.
What is it?
Yeah.
She's like, but I have like 40 more hours.
I have 50 more hours. He's like, I'm sure you do.
This is where I started to feel really bad. I'm like, oh no, honey, like you're brilliant. Your attention to detail is incredible. You're so smart. Mm-hmm. It's just like,
it's
the people part. Yeah. It's the
I got to see the grading rubric though. Like, was personality on the grading rubric? Cause she did science.
Flair.
She did science.
That is a really good point. And
I think she should have won.
Hey,
flair though.
Maybe.
You know,
is that on the grading rubric?
No, I don't think
Simpson
it is.
Said it was.
Well, let's call Stefan.
Can you fail a student for being boring? Is that what this
is? Especially because it was kind of Simpson's idea. He was like, Einstein relooks at his idea. So I think he was just like, hey, she took my idea. She's going to win. But that's someone who's bitter that they lost the science
fair. So you do think it's nepotism or not nepotism specifically, but
favoritism.
I think a little bit. I still think at the end of the day, he was kind of like, hey, Emma's means a lot to me. I want to give her a good grade. And he thinks Liberty's annoying. And I don't think that's fair.
What we need to do is all three of us tonight break into the Degrassi Community School, get those judge scores and look at them for our own self because I didn't see them.
Yeah, I need to see the rubric.
I also think that was kind of a weak thing to do on her part. Just change the name of the project. I can understand that. But you can't just use the exact same stats to now prove this new thing.
Reframed it.
You just reframed the whole thing, and then there are two outliers. One of them you're like, well, you know, junk food makes him happy. And what about this guy? Spinner. No one cares about what happened with him. It was
that was kind of a funny throwaway. They're like, Spinner, he's just an anomaly.
Yeah,
exactly.
He doesn't count.
You can just bully other students in your presentation and get a mark for flair.
I don't buy any of this research or data, but damn, you got that something, kid.
There is, I will say, Bruce McDonald clearly directed this episode. I could tell even before I didn't look. And just all these little details, like the Goldsby having the big robot head put over him, the kick me sign in the hallway. There's a lot of weird, quirky little prop stuff that I know that he likes to do. And then those crash zooms on JT's picture on Emma's project, which were hilarious. Mm-hmm. I could see his directing style all over it.
This is actually what I like about Degrads. I think you guys are making me realize the difference between the people who work behind the scenes. Because now that I've been listening to your podcast, Bruce has directed, you know, many of these. Mm-hmm. And now I'm starting to like pick up on that a little bit more than I wouldn't have just watching on my own. So very, very cool.
Yeah.
The brilliant thing about what these directors can do is they come into a show that already has a feel. It has a tone. It just has a very distinct look to it, and they match it best they can while also incorporating little things that are specific to their directing style. But so if you don't know what to look for, you just think it's another episode. So it's beautiful. It's trying to fit it in without anyone noticing while also making them notice at the same time. It's a needle you have to thread. Yeah. It's good for you, Bruce.
It's like a DJ producer tag kind of just.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Pizzazz.
Exactly. So
pizzazz.
Cool.
It's panache, all those P words.
So Emma got back just in the nick of time, explains her original hypothesis, and then the pivot to her new one, taking into account the counterintuitive results. And Simpson is impressed. Emma breathes a sigh of relief. Next, Spinner is at his locker, and he's tearing down all of his Bikini Girl pinups to avoid excess stimulation. I can understand that was in his head. This is a wise move. And then he bites into a... a half moon pie. I love me some half moon pies. Sorry, that's just my own thing. And he explains to Jimmy that his hormones will calm down if he just puts enough junk food back in his body to nullify the effects.
Spinner logic. I think Spinner would be dead by now if he hadn't had friends to question his logic.
This is true.
100%. Now we are back at the science fair. The awards are being presented, and Emma wins, much to Liberty's chagrin. But then Simpson cheers from the back, which Emma clocks, and then suddenly seems to not be enjoying this moment as much. And Liberty is appalled by this whole thing because she thought she had it in the bag and she really did deserve it.
I agree. I want to break into the set of TNG and steal all those girly pictures from Spinner's locker. That's what I want to do.
They're still crumpled on the floor in a waste paper basket.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry. I'll find you some new ones. I'll send them to you.
We'll send
print them out for me.
Yeah, please.
Via mail. Normal mail.
Go like through my old magazine collection. Not that kind of magazine collection. Come on.
Yeah, right.
So Spinner and Jimmy now eat in the caf, and Spinner has done a 180, telling Jimmy that he has mojo now and all the ladies are taking notice.
Right.
So because of all that female attention, he's going to lean into this health food thing. A very Spinner thing to do.
Very Spinner.
Jimmy doesn't really have much to say about this, so we'll see how it backfires. Now we're back to the media immersion lab with Simpson, and Emma and Manny are messaging back and forth, joking about Mr. Simpson. But Manny's message about Simpson loving Emma's mom accidentally sends to the whole class.
Mortifying.
Totally mortifying.
Manny gets detention Simpson is not happy about what just occurred.
I mean, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
That's quite a private piece of information about a student and a teacher and the student's mom. Like, yeah.
And it could have just been a rumor. There's so many things that this could have turned into if it wasn't true. Like, it was no one's business to share that information. So
I have another fun Degrassi Junior High fact for you. Now, this didn't actually happen in the show, but in the original scripts, Spike's mom was actually supposed to date Mr. Radich, and Spike was supposed to go through this exact same storyline that Emma's going through.
Of course.
It never happened, but I got to go see
the
archives.
How did you know?
When I worked with Linda as her publicist, I got to access to all these Degrassi archives to kind of research the show. And I seen that Spike's mom was supposed to date Radish. So then this whole connection just would have been insane if they had it continued to do that. How would you
feel?
What
else did you see in those archives?
So you saw all of these like prospective storylines that they were thinking of doing?
All the things that they had pitched. So Emma would have had to deal with maybe Radish being her grandfather. That would be insane.
Wow.
Which would be worse, I guess.
Grandpa Radich.
Grandpa Radich. But yeah, it was pretty cool. I got to see all the archives and stuff. It was pretty sick.
That's amazing. We didn't even get access to the archives.
You got to be Degrassi kid, baby. You got to be Degrassi kid.
That's great. That's
right. They were like, get out of this room, kid. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they were like, oh, Jocelyn, you know, you can go right in.
Yes. I have a special key. But
we have a desk here for you. If you can,
you put
you
in the years, I'm on the sign. I'm on the sign.
Sorry.
That's all right.
That is a really cool window into what the writers were thinking.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're in the hallway. Jimmy is furious to see that Spinner got Ellie's number, which she also seemed very like, didn't even look at him, just kind of hands it back and walks off.
She's so cool. I eat it up.
She's very cool. Jimmy walks up and is not happy with Spinner, and they have their first physical tussle. Jimmy throws Spinner up against the lockers. Spinner doesn't seem to be bothered by this. In fact, he snakes away while still taunting Jimmy about what he just accomplished.
Well, this is like a friend fight. It's not like a Jimmy versus Sean. That would be
fair enough.
Bloody.
But Jimmy seemed pretty pissed about this. I didn't have any moments with buddies of mine when we had a disagreement. I didn't have moments like that where they would shove me up against the lockers. Yeah.
Have you even had buddies?
Excuse me? Yes. I could call them right now.
Oh, really?
I could call them right now.
Gotcha.
I could show you text messages. I could show you contacts, okay?
Dad, they're saying I don't have any friends. Sorry, Jocelyn and I are bullying Shay now on his own show. It's
feeling like high school all over again.
I'm embracing my inner Jay Hogard in this episode.
Yeah, let's do that.
Trying to be a candy bandit.
You are.
Bullying is wrong, kids, and you're experiencing it right here.
Sorry.
In my own house.
Okay. That is kind of fun.
Okay.
This was shot. This scene, does anybody else feel like this scene was shot weird? Like it was very long lenses down the hallway. Everything was very far away.
Ooh.
And Jimmy's weird move of like getting the number out of Spinner's hand. I don't even know what he did there, but he kind of like deked him out and rolled around him and suddenly had the number. I don't know.
We're starting to see Aubrey's real personality come through in Jimmy in this episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is the first time I really felt like, oh, that's Aubrey.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. Now he's kind of on his own. He's singular. We're starting to see he's got a bit of like a whimsical side, a little bit of, he's having kind of fun with these moments. And it just, really just feels like Aubrey.
I'm curious how much of it had to do, if you watch the Degrassi doc, he reveals that he had a crush on Stacey Farber. So I wonder how much of it is him putting that in to be like,
are you serious?
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Oh, wait a damn second. Because Stacey Farber was my crush on my secret crush on the show. I don't know if I've ever done that.
Guys, Stacey Farber was my secret crush on the show.
What?
Should we rename this to the Stacey Farber fan podcast?
Let's do it. Or we just create a totally different podcast.
Can I just, reach out to her and make sure she's okay with that first before we do that?
No, I'm mortified. I am mortified to think that she would ever find this out.
You're just flexing that you have her phone number. That's all.
Well, just so you know, Mike, I'm not editing that out. I'm going to keep that right where it is. Right where it is.
Drake admitted it in the doc, so hey.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. And I'm probably going to use it as the soundbite and the clip to promote this episode.
Oh, for God's
sakes, buckle up, kids.
Then I won't tell you about the story, the time when I was in New York visiting my... Oh, this is so bad. I can't believe I'm saying this. I was visiting my girlfriend who lived in New York because she was going to school there. And Stacey was in New York also. And I was like, hey, let's all go out. And I brought my girlfriend to meet Stacey for coffee. And my girlfriend at the time had no idea that she was my show crush. Well, that's really bad. Is that bad? Jocelyn, is that bad?
No, it's fine. It's a little bad, but that's fine. Okay. It was so long ago. It's also Stacey Farber. I would do the same.
Right?
I'd be like, babe, hold my purse. I'm going to meet Stacey Farber.
So look, Mike, I won't let you stand alone on that one. I'll share another story. I was dating a girl very seriously in my early 20s. And then at one of my birthday parties, I invited Paula Brancati and Nina Dobrev to the party. And they both came.
Okay.
And
where's
Spinner and Jane were already an on-air couple at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And my girlfriend did not like that they were there at all. She gave them the cold shoulder, and I was kind of caught in the middle. And then I'm sure her and I had a fight about it later, but I saw immediately that Paula like just shrinks, like, oh.
But it's fictional.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it was just a colliding of the worlds, and I thought it would go well, and it didn't go that well.
That's fair.
I don't have a story like that, but every person I've dated does know that Annie Clark, who played Fiona, is my hall pass. Despite the fact that we are best friend and she's married to a man, I feel a sense of loyalty over my hall pass. I've had it for like 15 years now. So every person I date knows Annie Clark is, if I ever get that
chance. You got to stay true.
Yeah.
You're not even into it anymore. You're just like, listen, it's forever.
It's been so long now. I would feel like I'm cheating if I changed my hall pass at this point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. That's awesome.
Did your hall pass come with an expiry date at the bottom? I think not.
No, you're right. No, it's forever. No,
it renews
it's
every
forever.
Year.
Forever. Exactly. In sickness and birthday. In health. Yeah.
And in health. Yes.
I got to go to the DMV every 4 years.
My hall pass renewed.
Yeah. Get your government letter. It's time to renew. Yeah. Oh, the price is going up every year. Worth it. Doesn't matter.
So ridiculous.
Okay. Back to the episode that we're supposed to be talking about kids.
Oh my gosh. We got off the rails.
Girls, so now man, we are, girls.
We are in the bathroom. First bathroom scene in a few episodes, I think. And Liberty confronts Emma about the Simpson-Spike relationship. Mm-hmm. After getting the confirmation that it is, in fact, true, not just a rumor, she suggests that Emma do the right thing and turn in the award due to the obvious judging bias. Uh-huh. It was a little insidious. It was more of like a mafia suggestion. You know what I think would be great if you did? You should probably do it. You don't have to, but I think you should.
I think Emma owes Liberty because Emma started a whole rumor around the school about Liberty last year.
That's true.
So I feel like she kind of has an owe one, you know?
Absolutely.
I think Emma gets in everyone's business. I think it's fair for Liberty to get in hers every once in a while.
100%. She does. Fair enough, Liberty.
But what I was thinking was, if that was me, I don't want to win top prize by the person above me being disqualified and I'm like pressuring them into it. Like, to me, that just feels like a win by default, right?
But I think Liberty does, because Liberty's like, this is going on my transcript.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to remember these people one day. I'm out of here. I'm so out of here.
That's a good point. I can't wait to not remember these people one day. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Literally, that's like in her wedding, but she doesn't know that yet.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. I think Liberty feels like she earned it. That's what I think.
Yeah. Now we are back in the media immersion lab, and Emma comes in and tells Simpson that she's not happy about Simpson punishing only Manny, and then moves to Liberty's claim of favoritism in the judging. But when Simpson defends his scoring of Emma's project, it becomes a full-blown accusation of Simpson trying to bribe Emma to win her love, to win her over. And
it's a full fight. Like, they're yelling.
It's a full fight. I know. She won't back down. People are walking into the class. That was a very bold move, Emma.
And Liberty catches some strays because Simpson's like, her project was uninspired. It's like, whoa, you're really going to call out Liberty?
It lacked flair. You should have seen Liberty walking in triumphantly and then just leaving, hanging her head and walking out. Simpson has to resort to showing Emma all of the notes that the other judges took. And apparently this feeling was unanimous that Emma deserved to win because Liberty, second place, while good, lacked flair.
Which apparently was on the rubric.
Apparently so.
Crazy.
Of course. So like in cooking shows, presentation plays a big part in the final mark, right? Not just use of ingredients, not just flavor, preparation, presentation. And that's where Liberty lost her marks. She could have done it.
I don't know. Scientists? I don't know if scientists are known for their flair.
Oh, you look at Neil deGrasse Tyson. Look at that.
His vest collection. Oh,
yeah, you're right. You schooled me on that one.
I mean, he's got the voice. He learned how to relate to the commoner by telling jokes and all these things. Like, guy has flair.
That's true.
You're right.
He's the only one. He's literally one example.
Exactly.
And it's why he's famous.
That's why he's famous. Exactly. Yeah.
Because he's the scientist who knows how to sell it.
If you ask them to name a scientist, they could only name him, right?
Bill Nye, actually. You know what?
Oh,
Bill Nye.
There's
Nye
another one.
Perfect example.
There's a second one.
Was Bill Nye? Was that more of a Canadian show? I don't even know. Is Bill Nye a Canadian show?
I don't know. Write us, tell us if it was American. No, he's American, right? For sure.
I only know Degrassi facts. That's it.
That's it. Sorry. That's all there's space in my brain for Degrassi facts.
Anything beyond that, I'm sorry.
Not a clue.
All right. We found your weakness, Jocelyn.
Everything else.
All right. So now we are in Kwan's drama class. And they are doing some improv.
Yeah.
Jimmy nominates Paige and Spinner for the scene and gives some sultry direction to what he would like to see and the roles that they're going to play. Paige is a very lonely housewife and Spinner is delivering a package. Good choice of words. Now, Spinner tries to cut it out, cut it short very quickly, but Paige is really taking to her role. And it just becomes a little bit too much for Spinner when she starts touching his arm and getting close. And then he has to turn away from the class. But Quan will not let this performer turn his back to the class when he's on the stage.
What is happening right now? The universe is coming apart. I don't understand why Quan is allowing this to continue, much less egging it on and forcing Spinner to continue.
It was a different time. I feel like it would have been allowed in class at that point.
Every time I've watched this episode, I've thought that same thing. But I'm curious if, because as the audience, we know Spinner's having issues with boners, that we're inputting that into the scene and being like, wow, this is so inappropriate. Because, I mean, it is just a scene of a lonely housewife and a delivery boy. There's a little innuendo, but I think it's the boner that really makes it pointed.
I thought the innuendo at this point was quite... I don't know. I thought it was intense. I thought Quan, at least a grown up, would have been able to pick up on that.
That's true.
From the jump. And I thought there's no way she's letting this go because Quan is so strict normally.
That's very true.
But apparently she'll let a scene play. She'll let it all go.
Maybe she was just excited that her class was actually paying attention. She was like, okay, this is what it takes.
That's good.
The kids love this.
Yeah.
Or maybe she had a good night with her husband the night before, and she's like, I'm all about this right now.
Wow.
Yeah. I feel it. I feel it. Yeah.
We're going to have to give this episode an X rating.
All right. Wow.
Okay, I gotta also say the tiara on Jimmy's head at the end of this scene was a chef's kiss.
One of the best parts.
Best
part. That is a reaction gif that's used all over the Degrassi fandom.
So basically, the Spinner's back into the class. Quan doesn't want this. She takes him, spins him around to display that he is at full mast. And the class erupts with laughter. Spinner dies on the inside and at first chance bolts for the exit.
In the United States, this episode was actually edited. So you don't see the boner scene. You only really see your face and you're reacting to it. And I'm just so curious, as someone who was, you know, banned and censored in the U.S., how does that feel to know that you were censored in the United States?
Good. No press is bad press, right? No, I actually didn't know that until right now. It makes sense because I think the target audience of Degrassi, or the way that the American network was positioning the show, was a little bit younger than the fans in Canada. So it would make sense. They also have, you know, very intense laws when it comes to censorship and what they allow to get through. So it doesn't surprise me at all.
I love that.
But I hope on, like, through DVD and now streaming, everyone could see what they missed when they were kids and really, you know, make up for lost time.
Good reason to come back to the show.
Yeah.
I know in your early episodes, you were talking about an OnlyFans, and I think that would be the perfect, like, plug. Like, the episode, the boner you couldn't see in the United States.
Wow. That's brilliant.
I had an idea, like, when OnlyFans came out, that I was going to be like, the completely ignorant OnlyFans creator who just thought it was like social media and was like, what do you guys want me to talk about and do? Like, you know, just come from a complete place of mystifying ignorance. And
I love it.
It was an idea for a minute.
That's what OnlyFans was supposed to be at the beginning until people figured out what you could also do with it.
That's true. Really?
You could just, you could talk to someone, and if you liked what they were doing, you could gift them and correspond with them directly. And then,
this is so unrelated, but in terms of social media ideas, I really wish we could go back to 2020 and have Janie and the Studes play house arrest over Zoom. That is like the idea that lives in my head. I would have loved to see that. It would have been so cool.
Like what a chat roulette kind of thing? We're all just set up.
That would be perfect. House arrest, house arrest. Yeah. Anyway, so far off.
And then a bunch of people going, what the hell is going on here? Just clicking off. We're like, don't worry, guys. Someone's going to like it. Someone's going to like it.
This. Dudes rules.
Where are all the AR reps? Okay. So that happened. Also, fun fact, because it's Bruce McDonald, when he had to get the class's reaction of seeing the boner, much like back in the Sue Johansson episode where she was demonstrating putting a condom on a banana, when it was the reaction of the class, I can't remember who, director, maybe it was Linda herself, because I feel like she might have been on set. She was such good friends with Sue
Hold
Johansson.
Hold my coat. I gotta see this scene.
But she told Sue to say the most vile, like she was going off with all the things to try to get these genuine crazy reactions out of us. Now, Bruce, a couple times, told everyone to imagine what was going on. And I guess it wasn't doing it enough for him. So then between, I think just before the last take, he kind of pulls me aside out of the room. He's like, hey, Shane, grab this, take this. And he hands me a salami. Like, that had to have been 15 inches long.
What?
I swear, it was huge.
No,
it was huge. And then he's like, just like, hide this. And then when you do the turnaround, like, you know what to do.
Oh,
like, okay. And that's what brilliant. Everyone reacted to. That's what everyone, it was,
oh.
Yeah.
My
He went for the shock factor there.
Movie magic.
Wow. And then you guys had sausages for craft services that day.
That's there right. We go.
Everybody had
anyone
a hot
want more spinner d-
Yeah. Great. Now I got to bleep that.
Worse than earwigs in the calf.
Yeah, you don't want those two things together. Okay. So now, speaking of the calf, Spinner is in the cafeteria, head down on the table, trying to disappear from the world. Jimmy comes to check on him, and I was gonna say that they made up, but they weren't really in much of a thing. Jimmy got his payback from pairing the two together, and I think he's over it. And they're just back to talking about Spinner and his health food woes. But Jimmy has heard this enough. He knows it's about hormones, and he includes lunch lady Sheila in this conversation to get her take.
I love this moment.
Even the, what can I do for you ladies? It's just, she's so grumpy and so awesome.
It's amazing.
Her slow stroll over to the table while laughing, like, I know what all this is about. No, it's not food. It's
so
hormones.
Wise.
So Jimmy is satisfied that now someone else who has more experience has his back in this argument. But before leaving, we then find out that she actually thinks that Jimmy is asking on behalf of himself. And now Sheila thinks that it's Jimmy that has a problem with
brutal,
unbridled boners.
A nice little twist.
And Spinner, this little mistake brightens his whole mood.
I love it. I mean, it's like they're all resolved to it kind of at this point. It's like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can live with that. You know, even Jimmy's kind of not bothered too much about it. And
no.
Yeah.
We all learned a valuable lesson today about what it's like to go through this stuff. And I'm okay with it now.
I did have a question about the cafeteria, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I want to know, was this, it's my understanding that this was your guys' actual cafeteria.
Yes.
Not building. Is that true? How did it work? Would they like close it down? Can you just tell us more about it? I'm so curious.
We ate there.
If it was already lit, if it was set up for a scene that we were, you know, we broke for lunch and then everyone had to eat and then we would go back. Everyone just knew, like, don't, like any of the hot set area, don't touch it, don't mess with it. But there was actually a lot of room in that cafeteria.
So
we didn't have any issue. And on normal days, it was just an empty cafeteria that we would all sit in.
We'd break, cool. Everybody would pile in there, the producers, the writers, the camera team, sound, mm-hmm. makeup, prop, everybody. We would all just pick a table. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I always remember, I literally, every time I'm making a stir fry, every single time I make a stir fry, I remember our stir fry station. because we had somebody who would just do stir fries, and you could walk up and be like, I'll take some green peppers and some chicken and some mushrooms and whatever. And they would make you a custom stir fry right there on the spot.
Yeah.
That is
we were
cool.
spoiled. We had craft services. So for any of you that aren't familiar with this, every set has craft services, which they will constantly be putting out and restocking all types of snacks and coffee and tea and drinks, gum, anything that people might need throughout the day while they're working. Then they will come out with little substantials, sandwiches, pasta, uh-huh. salad, things like that. Did I say it the way that people are going to make fun of me? No, pasta. And then there would be breakfast ready for us when we got to set for the people who were there early. And then it was a full catered lunch with steam trays that were all. So I gained weight every season. It didn't matter how much I worked out. Mm-hmm. I gained on average like 10 to 15 pounds per season because it was just so much food and it was great.
There's lots of different kinds of eating on set. There's stress eating. Mm. There's boredom eating.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
There's mm-hmm. just eating.
Yeah. There was also a lot of stress smoking when all of us were old enough
That's
to do
true.
That.
Oh no.
Uh-oh.
We did. We smoked. We were the bad kids.
There was something.
Like we didn't even need to.
There was a cornered off area for us.
Yeah. That's how I got pneumonia doing the show because I was like partying too much and not getting enough sleep and smoking yeah. and going outside to.
You were just method acting.
I totally was.
Yeah. You were committed, Mike. You were committed. 100%. You were going above and beyond method. Your contract. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a weird thing about smoking cigarettes on film sets. There was something back in those days that just made everyone do it. And then, funny story, when we did the Drake music video for I'm Upset and we're back on the old set, at that point, I was still vaping, but I hadn't had a cigarette in like 7 or 8 years, and we got back there and like, hey, can I have one of those? And everyone no was way. yeah
what
yeah it was like that. No yeah. time passed at all. I know, it was strange.
So sentimental.
Wow.
Don't smoke, kids. It's bad for you.
Yep. Okay, final scene, let's go. Emma is at home and Snake and Spike get back from a date. They are dressed to the nines. Snake sees Emma, tries to make a quick exit, and I don't think it's because he didn't want to talk to her. He understands she just doesn't want him there, so he doesn't want to ruin her, you know, whatever she's doing. And he offers to leave, but Emma actually calls him over. She wants to talk, and she wants to apologize for how she had been to him. She understood that she was out of line, and it boiled down to she just didn't want the school to think that she was getting preferential treatment. I don't think that's all it was, but that's what she went with, and we just have to go with that. Now, Simpson says that he gives her some options. He says he could transfer her out of the class, which she does not want, and then in a very nice moment, he makes an offer, which I hope he didn't mean, that I could stop dating your mom. And Emma says she doesn't want that either, which Aww. Really warms Archie's heart in the moment. And then as they start throwing the corniest of nicknames back and forth to each other, like Emmers and
it got a little...
the Snakester. Yeah, it was. Yeah,
it went from cute into cringe
to like,
just
yeah,
a
let's,
little bit.
Yeah.
But I was still down for it.
On that cringy moment. And a big smile on Emma's face, we freeze.
Wow. Sweet. What a good episode.
That's so good. Do you think that Snake sets Emma up there a little bit at the end? Like, or maybe we should break up?
100%. He was very coy about it.
Yeah.
He did not want her to say yes to that.
Yeah. That would have been a totally different
show. I don't think he had a plan. I think he was like...
Yeah, he was just saying things.
Do you want me to leave?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
In the alternate universe, she's like, could you? And he's like, No, I don't know. Like,
I don't have the script for this.
Yeah.
Things I really liked about this episode, all of those Bruce McDonald-isms, the weird props, the science fair stuff. And then, I think we're just starting to see a bunch of the actors settling into their characters, finding those characters, those nice moments. Jimmy and Liberty. I don't know why I'm stuck on Liberty. It just makes me so sad for her.
Oh, I love that. Justice for Liberty.
Justice for Liberty.
But I'm selfishly, I'm even going to say, like, I could see in my own performance, and you were talking about Aubrey's and a whole bunch of the characters. Everyone is
Shane, you were great in this episode. Sorry.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sorry.
I should have said that already.
That's okay.
You really were. You were
I know
delightful.
I was great in this episode.
No, yeah. Okay. Thank you. Stop it.
Thank you. No, I do appreciate that. But what I'm seeing of myself and the other characters as well is people aren't as uptight with their performances. So their real personalities are coming through. And I think the friendships that are being forged off camera between the cast members is starting to come through in the scenes where they're just supposed to be joking around and light and airy. It's really like there's a lot more life to all the performances this year.
I agree with you.
It's very much reading on screen. Everything feels a little bit more natural and everyone's kind of figured it out.
Now, Jocelyn, I know I've got a ton of questions and we haven't really, I tried to work them in, but I didn't really find an opportune moment. But like, I had some questions I was wondering for you, because I know, you know, the shoe's on the other foot now.
Yes.
You're our guest.
I'm here. I'm ready.
And I'm just curious. It's hard to, I feel a little bit like, and I've said this before, like, what do you get the person who has everything as a gift?
Yes.
Because I feel like you really do have everything when it comes to the Degrassi world. And I don't want to ask you the run of the mill stuff, because I just want to go a little deeper.
Let's go there.
Let's go there. I appreciate that, your candor. If you hadn't have found Degrassi when you did, what do you think would have filled that gap instead? What in that sliding doors moment of your life changes? How would you be different now if you'd not found it?
This is a good question. This also might be part of the podcast where I cry because I love Degrassi so much. But there is no way I can imagine my life without Degrassi. It was there for me through my toughest moments. It's even been there for me as my biggest celebration moments, you know, going to meet Linda and things like that, that I don't think there is a me that exists without Degrassi. It's just such a part of who I am.
Well, I'm so glad that you could be here, because like, I love this. Like, this feels like old friends catching up.
And I love that too.
Yeah.
I love it.
I just love having you on the show. And you just bring such a great energy to it. And thank you.
I love that we got to bond over Spinner's Boner together.
Many people got to. You know, sorry, just to, having you here and hearing what you just said, and it's just, I can't believe what we got to be a part of unknowingly. And now, I don't have a good ending for that. It's just,
that's why I'm so happy that you're doing this podcast, because it means a lot to us to have people who are on this thing that we love so much actually take it seriously and like debate, is Liberty in the right? Is Liberty okay in this scene? These are things that are really important to us to see. And I just am so appreciative that you guys have this
podcast. I love that. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. We just want to know that we can be of service. So that's awesome.
You're crushing it.
Speaking of, what is something about Degrassi fandom generally that people get wrong?
Oh, that's a really good question. What do people get wrong about the Degrassi fandom? I don't know if people quite understand just how much we just love this show. I think when you look at fandoms, you kind of have a little bit of a judgment about them and maybe what their intentions are. But, you know, I host every Thursday, we watch Degrassi with Degrassi fans, and there's always a subsect of the show that someone relates to and sees themselves in. And the passion of the show comes from just seeing yourself in it. And I don't know if that's if that's, you know, outside looking in at fandoms, people really see the heart besides just the craziness that comes with being a super fan of something. But yeah, I think it's just the heart that really, really is deep within us. The show helped us through high school so much. And we have a lot of values in us still as adults that we carry with us because of it. And I don't know if that's on the surface of fandoms.
That's good. I like that. I like that a lot.
Great answer.
It's true. And I do feel like, I mean, I've connected with certain shows in certain ways, especially I feel like a lot of it is timing.
Yeah.
Where you are in your life, what's happening, what you're going through. Certainly binged my fair share of, I think for me, it was like Lost. I had a bad breakup. I was living in this little basement apartment. I was wondering what the heck to do with the rest of my life. And then Lost came to me and I fell in love with that show. So I understand like timing is such a big part of it. And you mentioned there were personal reasons. You touched on a little bit about your sort of early teenage years and the emo factor. Are you able to talk about what was going on in your life at the moment when you found the show?
Yeah, because I think, you know, if anybody knows me, they're familiar with the fact that Degrassi helped me come out of the closet. But it was able to be there for me because I had such a long history with it. And when I was a kid, I grew up with a father who was an abusive alcoholic. And part of that was financial abuse. So I remember one time when I was a kid, my mom had written a blank check for me to go to the book fair. The idea was I'd take it, I'd pick my books, and my teacher would write it. And my dad went into my backpack and stole it and wiped my mom's entire bank account. And this was something we dealt with all the time. So as a kid, I went without a lot of things. So I went without TV. We didn't have cable when I was growing up. And my older cousin, her name's Kendra, she introduced me to the show. So I would take my allowance money and I would go to the mall and just buy up as many Degrassi box sets as I could. And I would take them home. And I spent a lot of my childhood alone in my room, just kind of binge watching Degrassi over and over again, falling in love with characters like Ellie. And it just gave me this sense of comfort, like Degrassi was my safe space, even if my own house wasn't. So that is where I really started to develop my trust in Degrassi and my love of Degrassi. So then when it did come to that coming out episode, I just felt so safe with it and felt so seen by it. And that's kind of the lore of what made me really dive into this show. Some of it out of necessity and some just out of having that comfort that I really needed as a kid.
So was it just happenstance that you went in and you had you seen Degrassi before to know, like, I knew? Okay.
Because
I was just wondering if it was a random pick that you're like, okay, I've heard this name before. And yeah,
that would be insane if it was random and then this started to happen. But no, my older cousin, Kendra, she's 4 years older than me, and I wanted to be just like her. And she used to watch Degrassi. She was in grade 8 and I was in grade 4. So I would be watching episodes like Emma's Period, and I don't even really know what's happening, but I just thought she was so cool. And I remember the first time me and my friends all went to the mall, that's when I saw the Degrassi DVD and I was like, guys, they talk about sex on this show. Like, let's get this. And then I just kept the DVDs and kept watching it. But yeah, my older cousin Kendra is the one. Who I was also so mad that she had a character on Degrassi named after her, and I did not.
Oh.
So that's my beef. Oh. But yeah, that's how
now,
I got into Degrassi.
What does Kendra think about your current role that you've stepped into?
She can't believe it. She's like, how? Because I was a very shy kid. Like, I never wanted to talk to anybody or go anywhere or do anything. And now the fact that I'll just get on an airplane or get on Canada's Walk of Fame. But truly, I can only do that because the topic is Degrassi. Like, I just love this show so much that it's my safest space to be, that I can get in front of anybody and talk about it. But yeah, she thinks I'm pretty cool.
Well, thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing all that with us.
That's Degrassi. Really, you have to be.
You got to be. Yeah. I just feel so much more connected to you. And this is so cool. I mean, we get to we're getting to hang out now and getting to really know each other. And it feels like a high school friend moment.
Oh, so. That
means
so much.
Well, Mike, Jocelyn and I, to be fair, met at the screening of whatever.
That's true.
Takes.
Yeah, whatever.
So we already have more history than you.
Well, I wasn't invited.
So now you have to work from behind, buddy. That's okay, right. You got to catch up.
Yeah. I'm catching up. As you all know, we're on Discord. We've got a DGrads community on Discord. We've also got a Patreon. We're active there, and we get a lot of questions. And somebody mentioned, God's Plan actually mentioned this on the Discord the other day. In Weird Science, Jimmy was kneeling when he was asking out Ellie and rejected. Mm-hmm. Not sure if it was a coincidence or serious foreshadowing to when he was also rejected by Ellie way in the future when he is in a wheelchair.
That's a interesting. Good. That's what I'm talking about, the foreshadow. Terry had her Oracle out for this one.
The Oracle, oh my God, makes return.
Nice callback.
It can't be destroyed. It's not in the garbage.
When you talk to most writers, the show, the characters kind of reveal themselves to them as time goes on. So more often than not, they were looking for new things to do. Oh, yeah, they had a moment before. But I think most of those just end up being the natural evolution of the storylines and those characters. Unless you're someone like Vince Gilligan, who knew every single episode of Breaking Bad from beginning to end before he did it. But
Jocelyn, have you ever talked to any of the writers?
Yes. Well, I've interviewed one. I've interviewed Duana Taha. I think she's
Duana.
Yeah. She wrote my favorite episode, which is the Chasing Pavements episode where Fiona comes out. So I was like, please do it. And then she knew all about me. I actually have a quote from her episode tattooed on my arm. It says, "I'm in love with her and she's a girl." So it was very cool to get to show that to her for the very first time. But yeah, I interviewed Duana. Nice. She told me that one of her favorite things was writing those spinnerisms. So that would be great to hear more about writing those spinnerisms. Yeah.
Yes.
Hey,
I can connect you guys if you need it.
Yeah. Hook us up.
I love that. Still offering up favors and connections, Jocelyn. You're so generous.
I got you. Anyone you need, just let me know.
All right.
What do you have coming up?
My name is Degrassi Kid. Honestly, if you type in the word Degrassi, me and Degrassi will come up. You should go find it.
That's good.
But yeah, I have a lot. I have guests on my podcast. I do autograph collabs with the Degrassi cast. If you love Degrassi and you want even more Degrassi in your life, look up Degrassi Kid and I'll be there giving you Degrassi content every single day.
Heck yeah. We love Degrassi Kid. You're on Instagram. You've got TikTok. The whole thing, all the crazy kids are doing these days. Yeah. And as I mentioned, if you've got any questions, please email us at dgradspodcast@gmail.com. We're on Patreon, dgrads. And you can find us at Discord as well, dgrads alumni community.
This has been incredible. This is one of those things I'm gonna be bragging about. I'm gonna be like, I met Linda Schuyler. I was on the Degrads podcast. It's gonna be added to my resume.
What a month.
Life is too good to me. It's actually insane.
Well, we're definitely gonna have you back and very soon.
Mike did mention that we have a Patreon, and if you're only listening to us right now but you want to know what these lovely faces are actually expressing, you can only have the video version ad-free on Patreon. So that's and there are other cool little things that we do, interact with the community and respond to specific fan questions. You can find us on Patreon, all the other socials.
I'm subscribed and I recommend it.
Sorry about the little break that we had to take, but life happens, you know. But we are back doing it again. Another episode of the Degrads podcast with Shane Kippel, Mike Lobel, and Jocelyn Claiborne. And we will see y'all next week.
Bye.